first thing I remember is fire. It's a war, I think. A tree. My mother puts me right inside, and we're... Mother! Mother the monster!
First thing I remember is the kind one. He picks me up, and he's big. He makes the monsters disappear, and I be safe.
I am safe. Podlings.
What's happening?
We're dream fasting, sharing our memories.
Who's got themselves a new theme tune, courtesy of the annoyingly talented TJ Drennan. Hi, I'm Spencer, aka Free Thrall. Welcome to Movie Monday, a Keep Off the Borderlands production. This month's film was hugely informative for me, one of the reasons I think I favour the darker side of fantasy. That movie is Jim Henson's Dark Crystal from 1982. Despite the utterly enchanting spectacle that it is, it certainly has plenty of dark moments. The story is a little on the light side, I'll admit. A pretty standard hero's journey affair. But I think you need that in a world like this. And what a world it is. The atmosphere this movie creates, I just want to get lost in this universe. We begin setting the scene with a bit of narration, which I think still holds up in the context of this movie, at least. It's not a huge info dump or anything, just setting the scene. Also, that voice of Joseph O'Connor gets you to really settle in, as the beginning of any fairy tale should do. We're immediately introduced to the grotesque decadence of the Skeksis. These are as fascinating as they are monstrous. If you're not marvelling at the artistry here, I can understand if this might all be a little bit on the thin side for you. The dialogue is functional and it has quite a sombre tone for the most part. This is no Muppet movie. Also, Jen, our protagonist, it didn't go unnoticed by the filmmakers that the Gelfling was the least expressive of the puppets in this whole production. Although I'd argue he's no less emotive than other leads we've seen in some of these movies. I'm looking at you, Hulk. Jen's internal monologue does a lot of the heavy lifting here in that regard. If any of you had any opportunity to see the TV series, I'm sure you'll agree that the shortcomings you might have seen in this film have been addressed there. Fortunately, CGI is kept to a minimum and is blended expertly with the puppet work. There's certainly a lot more going on story-wise. We have several factions of Gelfling, each with very distinctive cultures that are all beautifully realised. There's a great making of for the TV series on Netflix. You look at these things on screen and think, how did they do this? Then you see how they did it, and it's even more astonishing. Rather than it dispelling the magic, it just deepens your appreciation of the craft, I think. There's a character called Lore that's essentially an animated pile of stones, and I just assumed when I was watching it that this was created using CGI. But they actually built this thing. Now, there is CGI involved, but it's simply to remove the puppeteers. And that's an approach they take wherever possible in the TV series, thankfully. No matter how much work you think has gone into creating what's up on screen, you're barely scraping the surface as a viewer. Yeah, all pretty remarkable stuff. But back to the feature. This was the pinnacle of Jim Henson's work for me as a kid. The incredible conceptual design work of illustrator Brian Froud. The set designs, languages, symbols, all that geometrical stuff. Augurs, orrery, that model of the solar system is a wonderful bit of machinery. The Garthim, those terrifying stag beetle-like warrior things, the stuff of nightmares for a kid. And they remain pretty disturbing to this day. The level of artistry going on here is mind-blowing. And there is one more thing that struck me. That final scene of the movie when the world has been saved, spoilers, with the castle sitting in a lush green valley. I'm almost certain that is a shot of the Spey Valley, which is just up the road from me. And I'm very fortunate to live where I do. On that note, let's hear from what other folks have to say. First up, I think we have a voice that's new to Movie Monday, but it's certainly a voice we all know and love.
All right, Spencer. The Dark Crystal. What can I say about the Dark Crystal? Oh, my goodness. It is nostalgia up the wazoo for me. Fond, fond memories of going to see that when I was a kid. My cousins were into it. All my mates were into it. And do you know what? To this day, I'm convinced that the creation of Jim Henson, the story that he created, and I don't know, just the whole Jim Henson-ness of it all, combined with Brian Froud and his conceptual work and his art and all that goodness, just comes together in an awesome fantasy package for me. My last adventure, Monkey Isle, running ICRPG, it was influenced, massively influenced, towards the end. The constantly moving scenery and detail in the background, the plants and little creatures, there's constantly something moving, and it is something that I try and create in my RPGs. I realise now, every time I see it, I see there's something else that has subtly influenced me and not so subtly influenced me. The Skeksis, they turn up as villains all the time in my game, variants of, but there's always that influence there, that the mystical nature of it, the heavenly stuff. Oh, the like the planetarium thing that shows the heavens. When as a kid, I think I'd not long been to the London Planetarium, and it's very similar in some ways. As a kid, it seems very similar. And the times I've done like a wizard's workshop and been influenced by that apparatus, even when I was running my game and in Port Nyan Zaru, I had some guy, I forget what they were, some kind of priestly order or scholarly, some kind of geographical explorer types, and my idea was that they would have a study that would have this contraption that mapped the stars, and maybe, you know, it had a bit more of a geographical navigational kind of nature to it. But I'm convinced that comes straight from the Dark Crystal, and it's quite nasty as well. Quite nasty, draining the life out of them poor old podlings. And once again, that was in the last adventure I ran. So for me, I love it. And in fact, I noticed in the end credits that it was filmed at Elstree, and my daughter's actually studying at Elstree now. She's getting into film and theatre, a bit of project management, stage management, stuff like that. So, yeah, it's all that cyclical. It's coming round. What is it? The two become one. I don't know. I'm rambling now. But listen, I've got nothing really sensible to say about it. It's just awesome memories, and it continues to influence me. And Jim Henson, what a genius. Bit of a tragic tale. Didn't he die of pneumonia? Kind of overworked himself. I always mean to look in to find out a little bit more. And yeah, Brian Froud, now inspiring my son. He was using, he was actually drawing Skeksis for his most recent GCSE art project. So there you go, it's massive in my house. And keep up the good work on the movie stuff, Spencer. Really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to hear what everybody else says. Take care, and I'll catch you later.
A wonderful message there from Colin Spikepick Green, and of course, picking up on the details put into the flora of this world. There's so much going on in these shots that can be easily overlooked. And the torture of those podlings, pretty brutal stuff for a kids' movie. That's great about your daughter working at Elstree Studio. Awesome. I hope all's going well for her there. Colin kindly shared some of the images that his son had drawn. Some fantastic work there. He really captured that kind of folkloric, mythical, dreamlike quality of Brian Froud's own work. Thank you very much for that, Colin.
All right, Spencer, it's Evil Jeff here. So, our Dark Crystal review. I actually had recorded something with Minion Bravo and Minion Gamma. Unfortunately, the recording came out very poor. For whatever reason, it just was not doing a good job of picking up Minion Gamma. And sometimes when Minion Bravo spoke, it got kind of garbled. So, had to ditch that. Unfortunately, I was not able to get them to back together so we could record again, and we probably would have lost some stuff at that point. So this is just my review here. I had actually never seen the entirety of The Dark Crystal. I know it was on back in HBO for years afterwards, and I saw bits and pieces of it, but I don't think I ever sat down the whole way through. So yeah, it was a good movie. I think there were some, it showed its age a little bit here and there, some blue screen that was probably better on the big screen rather than in the higher resolution TV screens than we have nowadays. But, you know, great classic story. Here's the chosen one, going to fulfill the prophecy. And I will say that as Minion Gamma, who had never seen the movie, as she watched it, she kind of figured early on that our two main main races were related somehow, and was definitely evident after hearing that one of, you know, the main leader of each group was ready to die at the same time. So she was not surprised by it. Minion Bravo has seen all of it, seen Dark Crystal many times, saw the 2019 Netflix show that came out, read the comics, so he's seen a lot of that. And a lot of interesting stuff there. One of the more interesting things that he pointed out was that they used over a ton of live moss for set trappings and so forth out there. So, you know, pretty interesting. I like the fact that we didn't have a lot of this, hey, let's try to make a Muppet or puppet or whatever you want to call it, try to walk around and move around like you saw in some of the Muppet movies and everything. Now they go to a faraway shot here and there and have some actor that was clothed correctly to be the two protagonists and let them move through certain scenes. So I like that. You know, You know, story predictable with that whole idea. So in a way, you know, when you have something like this, it is get a little railroady. But it was interesting to see some of the elements they wanted to bring in there. The Chamberlain getting stripped, but him knowing enough about the prophecy to go and hunt things out, knowing that it was going to be most likely some Gelfling out there. And sure enough, he encountered one. What I don't think he was willing to realizing was there were actually two of them out there. We did find it funny, the girl Gelfling having wings and the boy did not. And he's like, well, you got wings. And how matter-of-factly she was, of course, I'm a girl. Or, of course you don't, you're a boy. And I don't think we do enough of that in our fantasy worlds. Differentiate between the male and female of a species with something as evident as that. Nothing that, you know, because sexually we understand we have that, but this would be something, you know, body-wise a little different. Not just bulk and muscle, you know, something physically different. So I did appreciate that. The Landstriders being a interesting contraption for them to ride on. We did think that our girl Gelfling, Kira, whatever her name was, Minion Gamma did point out that she was like a female Tarzan, talking to the animals and calling on them at the towards the end to help her out. So, good movie overall. Not a lot of memories of it, except for just pieces here and there that I saw. But, yeah. If you want to have a single one-shot quest, you know, basing it off of something like this wouldn't be such a bad deal. Look forward to hearing what other people say about the movie.
Another new voice to my take on Movie Monday, at least. Thanks, Evil Jeff. Great to hear from you. Evil Jeff from Minions and Musings there, of course. And a real shame we didn't get to hear from those Minions. And I'd forgotten to mention those Landstriders, possibly the most otherworldly looking things in this movie, and used to great effect. And yes, Kira really has some neat things at her disposal, with her wings and the ability to communicate with animals. As for using the movie as an adventure, I do actually have the Dark Crystal adventure game from River Horse by Janet Forbes and Jack Caesar, which is actually set in the era depicted in the TV series, which is a prequel for those who have not seen it, where you've got all the different Gelfling factions. It's a really nicely produced digest size book with a wealth of information there. It's really interestingly designed fold out maps. Some of them have like translucent overlays that add an extra detail to the map. Some really clever ideas put into this book, and very nicely put together with plenty of awesome artwork, of course. There's about 200 pages of adventures in this thing as well. And although it's laid out in quite a linear style, the adventures being designed to kind of be played through as a campaign, there's certainly a lot of other ways you could use the content here. Great for exploring the world of Thra in that period. Anyway, thank you very much for that message, Evil Jeff.
Okay, so I just recorded about 5 minutes and then it totally screwed up, so let's go at it again. I just finished watching The Dark Crystal, and it was goddamn amazing. I loved every second of it. Thank you, Spencer, for throwing this one on the list. I don't think I've seen it in its entirety since I was a kid, and it's just, it's amazing. I love it. We do not have kids' movies like this these days, and we haven't for a long time, I feel like, that are this hard, that are this dark, that are this epic. And I feel like that's a detriment to our kids, man. I really do. I really do. It's so, Dark Crystal is so, so good. What a wonderful world to play an RPG in. Like, for real, man. The world building that this movie gets done in its runtime of, you know, not counting credits, but like 130 minutes, man. 90, friggin'. Yeah, it's a tight runtime, and they get so much world building done in there, and it's just amazing, man. So, you know, I haven't seen the 2019 show. I'm a little hesitant because I love this world so much, but I also kind of want to because I love this world so much. I love the prophecy. I love the quest idea. I love Kira and Jen working together, both of them showing full goddamn agency. Kira isn't just some, you know, female damsel in distress. Several times throughout the movie, she uses her agency, her power to save the day, to do awesome stuff, man. And Jen is right there with her doing awesome stuff together. And it's so friggin' cool. I just love to see, there's so many awesome scenes and lines. I love the scene after Jin and Kira meet up and she's like, or he's like, well, you don't have to go with me. And she just looks at him and goes, I know, but I'm going anyway. Like, she doesn't say, but I'm going anyway, but it's just like, yeah, but I am. It's so good. And then he says, all right, together then, which is a callback to when he first sets out on his quest. Jin says, I don't want to go alone. All right, alone then, and sets off. And then he comes back to that later on. There's such good storytelling techniques, like the scene where Jin and Kira are first meeting, and Jin is seeking in the quicksand swamp, and then Kira calls the Nabari, I think is the name of the creature that comes up and rescues Jin, and we see how sweet and kind and just gentle these creatures are. And then boom, flash to Skeksis in the very next scene, gluttonously feasting on these same creatures, like a bunch of gross, evil, just, I feel like these are, the Skeksis are the most blatantly hardcore evil creatures we've seen in any of these movies so far. They are just, they're just vile, despicable, evil, evil creatures with these crazy, super hardcore, scary as hell, you know, mechanical soldiers that they have, those spider crab monster things. Those things are terrifying now, man. I'm sure I was scared of them as a little kid, but I love everything about this movie. It's really great. It's really freaking, it's really, really good. One quibble with it is at the very end, after the crystal is healed and the Skeksis are formed back into one benevolent, beneficent being who are like, the prophecy is fulfilled. We'll bring Kira back to life and leave you with the crystal of truth. They don't for a single second apologize for at least 1,000 years of terror and murder and genocide. Not even in a, oops, sorry. Not once, dude. They basically are just like, yeah, we did that, and now we're not going to do it anymore. Peace out. And it's like, damn, all right. But the last thing I will leave you with is actually the first thing from the movie, the opening narration. It is used in a sample from the Crystal Method song, Trip Like I Do. And for years, I didn't know where this sample came from, but I thought it was so cool. Check it out. God, it's so good. That's so good, man. Yeah, so for years I didn't know where this sample came from, but it just fired my imagination, and I never really knew why. But now I do.
Their souls, the crystal.
So good, man. Thank you, Spencer, for suggesting this one. Thank you, Jason, for getting this whole movie night started. Thank you, Henchman, for suggesting this whole movie night thing. Thank you, everybody, in advance for your amazing calls. I can't wait to listen to them. Anyway, that's it for me. Take it easy. Peace out.
That's awesome, Joe. Joe Richter of Hindsightless there. I've nothing really to add to that, apart from I'm really glad that you enjoyed it as much as you did, and you've got a really good point there about that ending. To be honest, I don't really want to contemplate that too much out of fear of the whole concept collapsing. But thanks, Joe, that was great.
Hey Spencer, this is Merc. Nostalgia is a tricky thing. I think I last watched Dark Crystal 15 years ago, and before I watched it now, my memory thought it was a great movie, and I think that colored my reaction to it this time. It swung from extremely positive towards negative. The story seems derivative. There's a lot of heavy-handed narration towards the beginning and the end. The whole concept of, like, the chosen one, the prophecy about the Gelflings, I don't know, not too keen on that anymore. I guess for one thing, the conjunction of the stars is motivation enough to take the shard and fix the crystal. That's like once in a, well, many lifetime event, and if that's the only time you can solve this whole thing, then that's impetus enough. The Skeksis were driving the Gelflings to extinction, I suppose partially because of the whole prophecy, but they were trying to extract the life force anyway to stay young. So I'm not sure how much that prophecy was really necessary. I haven't watched very much of the Netflix series. I'm still interested in it. It's just finding the time is tricky, but I think the story and some of the particular characters are a little on the weak side. Agra is just basically a female Yoda in a lot of ways. Frank Oz puppeted both Yoda and Agra, so there's another connection there. This is Jim Henson's like first attempt at a serious fantasy work. I mean, the Muppets aren't realistic, but they usually are in a more realistic time frame. So he was swinging for the fences. He made some pretty bold moves with the movie, but I don't know if they necessarily paid off. What's interesting is I think he had to rein some things in one of the, or maybe multiple, of the behind-the-scenes clips that I watched. Originally, most of the dialogue wouldn't have been understandable by the audience. Only Gelfling speech would have been spoken in our language. Instead, like the Skeksis and the Pod people actually, they don't have a language that's understood by the audience, but the Skeksis would have had a language that we wouldn't have understood. And when they first screened it, then people couldn't follow it, especially children. They were a little confused and lost by it. So they had to go back and actually like dub in English lines for the Skeksis and everything so that the story flowed a little better. And I believe, or I hope at least, that that's when the heavy-handed narration at the beginning, maybe at the end, came in. At least that's my hope. Because I think it would have been really interesting to not have a lot of understandable dialogue and kind of leave it up to the audience's interpretation of what's going on. And I think that was a very bold move on Jim Henson's part to try that. I think there's a lot of great creativity in the story. I like the big picture is amazing, but I just feel like the implementation, getting into the details, wasn't as strong. Like the concept of the Skeksis and the Mystics originally being one species that split with the crystal, essentially their essences were divided out. It was like a Jekyll and Hyde type of thing. That's really cool. The general world building is amazing. I love as they're just traveling through the environments, seeing all the flora and fauna, and sometimes the flora that seems like fauna and fauna that seems like flora. It's just a bunch of inspiring, creative creatures and things in the background there. So, like, the world building, the artistry, the puppetry, all of that stuff was pretty cool. The land striders, you could kind of tell they were, you know, stilts, essentially. But a lot of the that's once again, like the implementation is not as strong as the ideas and the concepts behind everything. So this movie feels like a world building referee loves the world build, but the PCs are kind of an afterthought. And so the story isn't quite as strong, but the world is really rich and amazing. That's kind of how I feel about The Dark Crystal right now. So it's still cool to watch. It's inspiring, and obviously it inspired an entire series. It took many years to get there, but there's enough conceptual meat that they could take it and flesh it out into a series. And I need to watch it sometime. I started a while ago and didn't get very far. I tried again recently, but just busyness with everything else, couldn't devote as much time to it as I wanted to, but it's pretty fascinating. I got Dark Crystal and it was like a 2-for-1 thing, so I got Labyrinth when I bought the Dark Crystal recently, and I watched the Labyrinth as well, and I feel like Jim Henson learned a lot from the Dark Crystal, took those lessons and improved on them and wrote and, well, made Labyrinth. And that is definitely a superior movie. And I'm looking forward to whenever we discuss that. I think that'll be great. But so that's my take. It's kind of a mixed bag. I feel like maybe if I wasn't remembering this as an awesome movie, maybe my opinion wouldn't have swung so much when I got back into it. I don't know, just like expectations were not met this time for whatever reason. But I still think there's a lot of inspiration that could be took from it. And it's fun watching the behind-the-scenes stuff as well. I recommend that if anybody can watch it. I mean, I just love watching people build these type of things. And anywho, I'm rambling on now. But once again, thank you, Spencer, for putting this on. I'm looking forward to what you have to say and what everyone else has to say. So take care.
Well, Merc the Meek, you sounded more than a little disappointed, deflated even. And I guess it's fair to say it does come down to what you're looking for in this film. It is the archetypal hero's journey. The chosen one fulfilling a prophecy. The main character, again, a very simple archetype, Jin isn't much beyond a vehicle for us to experience the world. The voiceover too is something of an outdated trope, and this kind of alien language idea may go some way to explain why some aspects of the film were kept simple. But as I say, it does come down to what you're looking for in the movie. I wonder if watching a foreign language version of the film might fix that for you. As far as early concepts that were dropped during production, at one point the whole story was going to take place underground, an idea that would later resurface as Fraggle Rock. Hearing your criticisms, it does sound like you might get a bit more from watching the TV series. There's certainly more complexity and nuance to the story there. We get to see fleshed out cultures and communities, and we also get to see a broader variety of the landscapes, flora and fauna. I think I need to go and listen to Joe's message again. No, but I do appreciate your feedback, Merc. I want to get all perspectives on this film, and I do recognise the movie's shortcomings. I'm just sorry to hear they prevented the film from working for you. As for Labyrinth, I hope to get around to doing that one at some point. And back in the day, I think I did favour Dark Crystal over Labyrinth. To me, certainly as a kid at least, it had a darker, more serious tone.
The Angle of Eternity. Dark Crystal. So the Dark Crystal is still pretty great. I know some people have complained about they can see the wires and whatnot, but all told, I really do like this movie. I think that all the work with puppets and whatnot is wonderful. I do think it all stands out and stands up, even today. I really don't see a big issue with it. And let's be honest, when we watch these things in high def, we're seeing things that you were never really meant to see back in the day. So I don't think that's a big hassle or a big problem. The story is, I mean, if you're paying attention and you're an adult, I don't know if I picked up on this as a kid when I watched it originally, but as an adult, from the get-go, it's pretty darn obvious what's going on here, right? There are no real, well, I would say the real surprises in this movie are kind of the life and death parts of it. It's pretty dark in a lot of places, from sucking the willpower, I guess, and soul out of the podlings and turning them into slaves, to death, just straight up character death. It's a pretty bleak movie in some ways. I mean, obviously, in the end, it's hopeful, but it's, you know, for kids, it's pretty dark, which isn't a bad thing. I don't think we need to protect our kids from seeing this kind of thing. I think that these kind of stories are appropriate, and it's important to introduce kids to these kind of concepts, and this is a good way to do it. I love the Skeksis. I love the design. I love all the creature designs in this film, but the Skeksis are really good. I like the asymmetrical nature of a lot of the characters. I like how the Skeksis are all kind of different from each other. I think that works really well. Some of them are, you know, you have that like mechanical claw in the one you see early on and some other things. Really, really neat stuff. What else? The world. You know, they say it's an alien world, and I think they really do deliver here, except, of course, there are worms in this alien world. I'm not sure that there are any other Earth animals mentioned, but they do mention worms a couple times. So there's that. But yeah, I like the creature design. I like I say, the story's simplistic and it's pretty obvious what's happening from the beginning as an adult. But, you know, it's fine. It's interesting. I don't think you get bored watching that. Too bored watching this. The scenery is wonderful. The puppetry is wonderful. And it's interesting as we go meet different creatures and go to different situations. All in all, I think this is a win, and I still think this is a great movie for kids and a great thing to watch as a family kind of movie because it gives you some great talking points with your kids. So, yeah, two thumbs up for Jim Henson's The Dark Crystal, 100%. Thank you for picking this one. I really appreciate it, Spencer. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jason. Jason of Nerds RPG Variety Cast blog. Now, more about that in a moment. I really appreciate you making the time to watch this and submit a message. I know you've got a lot going on at the moment. I agree. This is a great one to watch with the kids because despite the straightforward story, there is a lot going on in this world that can stimulate some interesting discussions. And I think there is a timeless wonder to the puppetry in the same way good stop motion still fascinates. I think it's that you can see the craft, even if you can see the strings at times, and maybe because of that. It certainly has a quality that most CGI doesn't contain. Not that there isn't such a thing as good CGI, but it comes down to the fact that, you know, studios can churn this stuff out in a pretty soulless manner. Thank you very much again for your message, Jason. And speaking of Nerds RPG Variety Cast, I have decided to dedicate the next movie choice to the imminent loss of that podcast that is so dear to our hearts, the former home of Movie Monday. Nerds RPG Variety Cast is sadly coming to a close. Jason wants to devote more time to other things, and who can blame him? He's given so much to this community over the past 4 years, with 600 episodes plus. I wish you all the best of luck with your new endeavours, Jason, which include the blog that I referred to earlier. You can find that at nerdsrpgvarietycast.com, and it's a great way to keep tabs on what Jason's up to. I don't doubt we'll continue to hear his voice on other shows. The film in question for next month is Albert Pune's 1982 feature, The Sword and the Sorcerer. That episode will air on the 27th of May. So entries before the 25th, please, if you want to ensure being featured on the episode. You could submit those messages via the usual channels by emailing me at spencer.threefrall@gmail.com or through Discord, details in the show notes. I'm now going to hand you over to the capable hands of Goblin's Henchman and the Umber Bulk. The Southwest Sofa crew will be playing out this episode. So, over to you, boys.
Okie doke, fella. So, the Southwest Sofa has reconvened.
Yo.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. So, again, one you must remember.
Yeah, for real, man. This is an all-time favourite of this.
All-time favourite, is it?
Well, not one of the all-time favourites, I think. I keep on saying that, though.
Well, better to be enthusiastic than not, right, to be fair.
Just super, super good. Okay. And I've watched this recently as well.
Have
so
you? Okay.
Not like recent, but just when the Dark Crystal, when the series thing came out. Then we watched that, then we watched this with the kids and stuff, so.
Okay, because I did watch the Netflix, and I think I did the same as you, so I watched this within the last few years, but I'm so bad at films that till you reminded me, I actually thought the sequel, or prequel?
Prequel.
I thought the prequel was just like a remake, so I was like, really, was that all right, okay. That's a bit crap, but I remember watching this at your house in the depths of Somerset back in the day with you, and I remember like you were mad keen on Dark Crystal. I was always a little bit like less keen. So I worry about this film as like a little bit just too cutesy, but there's some dark bits in it, if I remember correctly.
Man? What are you trying to say? I'm like properly vanilla or something?
No. I think my guess is that you watched this a lot as a kid, much younger than me. And
probably, I watched this at the cinema.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
so it probably had a big visceral reaction because I watched Flash Gordon at the cinema when I was a kid, and that film is always, that's almost like one of the first movies I saw in the cinema, and it's always had like a massive impact in my brain. Incidentally, I think Flash Gordon's amazing. I love Flash Gordon.
Yeah, the Flash Gordon is amazing. And also Flash Gordon as well. That's
Probably less said about that, the better.
But no, this, again, so for me, I think, we, as you just said, for Flash Gordon, watched this at the cinema with Dad back in the day, and there's a little bit that scared the crap out of him, and I just remember as a kid...
Oh, him?
Yeah, okay. I just remember as a kid, it just made me laugh the most in the world and stuff. Okay, there, cool. Things. So kind of watching your dad get really scared about some jumping, like properly jumping as well, was
I'm a bit of a jumper, man. So is there some jumps I need to
wear? No, not at all.
Put my
coat down. It was the
extended cinema version.
No, it was the previews for the other films that were coming.
Oh, right, okay. Fair enough. All right, but I know there's some dark bits in this, but okay, I'm just going to like wipe my preconceptions, like clear them so I don't take any baggage with me. Do you think I'm going to do it?
No.
All right. So literally, I can't remember anything about this film thinking about it. I remember some key scenes, even though I watched it 2 years ago or so. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I see that critter there. I remember him.
Yeah.
Right. So
just for the thing there, and I might get some stick for this audio of bits and pieces. We do call my mum Ogra. just a various things in there. So everyone's going to make it sound like it's quite harsh or whatever, but...
I'm guessing I know who that is, although, as you said, this image came to mind.
There's a little thing up there as well.
Oh, that, exactly. Yeah. Okay. It's not very kind. You're not dressed up today.
I'm not dressed up today, but just back from work, so a long day
Fair
of work,
enough.
So work.
Yeah,
so
just, okay, you're off. I will say I am in my wizard robe and hat.
You are. You've made,
just for the record.
You've made 200% more effort than me.
Well, it wasn't that hard. All right, let's pause it and hit the dark. It is dark, right? The dark crystal. Yeah. Right, pause him. Boof. Okay, fella, that was The Dark Crystal.
Yeah, how good was that?
Yeah, actually, I was surprised. I was a little bit scared because I was genuinely thought like...
Because of the beastie shepherd. Or...
Just, I thought it was going to be two cutie pies because that's why, from what I remembered, like, you know, and I think the cutie dog thing was probably... It was fine. It wasn't overdone, so I was quite happy with that. And you know what? I think when I watched this back in the day, I kind of liked it, but I didn't really love it. But I think I kind of took some of the puppetry for granted. I actually thought like that was this is not BC and it's not AD. It's what do you call it?
It's Ace? DC.
DC.
Yeah, DC.
I've forgotten.
During Conan. Both in 82.
Right, yes.
So it didn't kind of go into what month it was or anything like that on IMDb. So I just...
So this is the same year as Conan? Yeah. Well, that's impressive. Okay. Well, the music's going a bit crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kept like bits of the prequel or whatever it was, the Netflix, and it was kind of... My brain kept thinking, how's that fitting with this? How's that fitting this? But I have to say, I liked it actually. I was expecting not to like it, and well, not hate it, but I didn't think I was going to like really vibe on it. But actually, I thought it was actually quite a good bit of storytelling.
I think it's definitely something that led itself or let itself have a prequel type thing. It's all of that thing where you could just look at it and go, yeah, we need to know what's going on beforehand and stuff there. And I think they did.
You couldn't do a sequel, could you? Because the finish, done. Happy Valley. Plenty of films do it, don't they?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The Gelfling was cleaning his teeth and he knocked the crystal in. One of the skits.
He woke up and it was just a dream.
That's right. Or what's her name? Ogra. Ogra was actually secretly the plot twist. She's a bitch, man. Yeah. She's going to smash the crystal again. Not 1,000 years.
Can't ever trust my mum.
your poor mum. Anyway, but yeah, I thought it was good. I really liked the kind of dressing. We were talking about this during, like the weird creatures and like all that kind of stuff.
Just and as we were saying on the thing there, you just have a scene where you've got your main characters doing stuff, but then a little beastie would just be running along the floor on a thing, just kept it alive for me. Just made all of those scenes just almost
not like the opposite of Dungeon Master, right? Because everything yeah. that was like small scenes and there was nothing else in the background, because this they attention to detail, right?
Yeah.
Trying to
yeah,
add
yeah,
a little definitely. Bit of extra,
and
extra stuff.
Go through the forest and the woods and the swamp and all the other bits. There's always there's either little tiny beasties again doing stuff, or like plants that do certain things, or
and just... like that creature who set like lifted the gelfling out of the swamp, and then next scene the Skix is a roasting one.
Yeah.
It's quite nice. And you really love those creepy beetle dudes. What are they called?
Gorthogs or something. Garthogs.
Anyway, those they were a really nice bit of
Is it
there? What's that? There nice bit of like
Garthog.
He's turned it off, man.
Gartham, I think it was. Gartham.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, there was obviously a guy in there, but they kind of had a creepy movement, and I quite like when they die, they kind of like just opened up like just kind of like
part
and,
yeah.
like a suit of check like a suit of plate mail.
Yep.
But and
they just did the whole thing where they did that stuff, just for me, as I say, the thing there, just they still just kind of make me shudder and kind of like, oh, these are so bad, they're so bad, and just with their, you know, they're kind of almost like the tentacles underneath, and then the carapace and stuff. Yeah. So, yeah.
And, you know, I have to say, when I remember watching this as a kid, I'm not sure I really picked up on the, you know, the Mystics are the kind of inverse of the Skixies.
Yeah.
But as
I didn't.
I mean, I've obviously now know that and watching it as an adult, but I think maybe watching it as an adult, it was pretty pasted on. You just have to, like, be slightly aware of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, like, yeah. ten of them, Dying Master.
There's part of it you kind of go, is that because we now have had so many things like that along the years that we're now like, oh, that's just obvious. But actually at the time, was it something at the time where actually even adults went, oh, that's a good twist?
Well,
I don't know.
I think probably, like, with all the stuff going on, you might not have, like be focusing on the coincidence that is that. You just thought, that's just a bit of, like, cheesy storytelling rather than, like, actually design. But, yeah, I thought the whole thing... Basically, it kind of flowed. It wasn't like too action packed, and I thought it was good.
Well, it's like we were saying, the kind of story, almost told itself, didn't it? For me, it didn't take you by the hand and kind of go, "This is what we're doing now." Stuff there. It was kind of just some stuff you just had to just get.
Yeah, figure it out.
Yeah,
just follow the story.
And even like we were saying, there was some stuff where it was that kind of classic thing of, well, I've got this crystal. I know which one it is. I know what to do with it, though. It's just like, you didn't tell me. You didn't bother telling me what to do. And you're like, oh, man.
That whole thing, Just tell me what to do with it, man.
Yeah.
Like, write it down.
Yeah. Put
in an envelope.
Do loads of stuff in the sand. Can't you just like, do some of there as well?
In case I die untimely, here's an envelope explaining how to save the world. And those bloody Skeksis, man. Like, why were they, like... making everyone's life difficult. How come they were so daft? I guess they were just like the antithesis. They split into good and evil, didn't they? And they just didn't know what was good for them.
They were just a good evil as well, weren't they? They were just like really horrible, like faux society, like high society rather.
Yeah.
And kind of,
you were saying they had like that really like
horrible,
like decadent court feel. They're all dressed in these like finery, but they're all kind of rags, really, and all pretty nasty, but they're still eating with their fancy finger cutlery, but they're disgustingly
throwing stuff onto the side and
just
the as you say, just the complete decadence of them.
And then
the whole thing of the draining the essence and stuff there, that was really good. They just made a whole lot of use of kind of things kind of inflating and deflating for the
that was
skin
quite cool.
And stuff there.
They also had a balloon inside, pumping up the skin or letting out the air. That was clever, actually. That did work well. And like, you know, the plot twist with the wings, that definitely caught me by surprise when the female girlfriend
showed you your flaps.
That one, yeah, exactly. Of course I got flaps, I'm a girl. Oh dear, I'm gonna get censored, dude. Anyway, all right. Should we give it? I guess we're still on dragons.
We're still on dragons, surely. Yeah.
I haven't really thought about my number. I'll let you go.
This is a strong one. I say this. I kind of feel like I say this for every single one, but the guys keep on, for me, they keep on hitting home runs every time with these. Yeah. These are all great, great films. And even, I think, some of the ones that we've watched that have been a bit poor, they've still just been quite nostalgic, which I think is probably what the majority some of this thing is for, isn't it, really?
Apart from, like, Dungeon Master.
Dungeon Master.
But there's no nostalgia for Dungeon Master.
No, not at all. So, yeah, it wasn't their thing.
There's no forgiving. There's no forgiveness.
So, I mean, for me, this is a strong... Four ancient gold dragons.
Ooh, four ancient, yeah.
And then a ancient silver dragon.
Ooh, swapping over. Ancient,
so I kind of get like 4.8.
Okay, so you're going quite strong with this.
Yeah, and though, as I say, like we were chatting on everything there, so you knew the bit that made my dad jump and stuff there. Yeah. Just made me just, and again, just for me,
that's a good
just,
memory for you, isn't it? Yeah.
So
what do you give Time Bandit? This is a 4.8, you say?
Yeah.
Are you saying that you're going higher? This is better than Time Bandit. That's what I'm asking, I suppose. Or is it about the par?
I think it's about par, so I can't remember exactly. We need to do our list of what we've done, don't we, man?
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to get back to that and do that. But
at some point.
Yeah, as I say, for me, just everything just hits the right spots for me. And, like, the bad guys are...
Probably bad.
Of, and when he falls down into that pit and then he's just surrounded by all of the Garthen, that's just like the worst thing in the world. They're horrible, they're clicky, that whole little thing.
The Nipper trying to grab him is climbing up the wall.
Real, like their eyes glow and stuff there. That kind of almost takes me back to demons, like, you know, and stuff there, the with film, that type of thing film, there. Yeah. So
that was quite a good scene where the eyes come out first and then creeped out.
So their thing there, the good guys, I think as we were saying, they're kind of a bit, but then again, they're deliberately not part, the main part of the story.
They're just like
the very
a clock,
end.
Aren't they? They're like clock counting down, bring it closer and closer, like a countdown.
And then just, as I say, as I said to you, again, the whole thing for those guys is, the bit that really hit me with those guys is when they then stood up and towered over the Stexies, towered over everybody else.
The bear hugged them.
Almost, yeah, for real, so.
Yeah, true. Yeah, okay, so let me think. So, I was expecting to give this something like a 4. I thought I'd be good. Although you think 4 is like a bat in the light as low as it gets. 4-0 and anything that means
pretty much, man.
But that means like when we gave Dungeon Master like 3.5. That's a negative score.
Yep. I think that's fair. Dungeon Master had some bits. It started off really well, and then it just went downhill, didn't it? But that's we're on. We're
yeah,
well,
let's go back. Let's swap
in there.
So I liked it. I reckon it's hard to hear. So it's 4 ancient brass dragons.
Okay, that's fine.
And I'm gonna say
really difficult to then think, what do I do for that?
Sub-adult brass dragon. So I'm gonna say 4.7. So
okay,
I did like it, and
that's a pretty high score to be fair.
I would watch it again because I was expecting to watch it and think, a bit too cutesy. But yeah, I'm glad I watched it, and I think it was a good pick. So I'm pleasantly surprised. Yeah. Like that Time Bandits, I was disappointed because I got
don't even go there, man.
Because the Monty Python thing caught me out, but this is the other way around. Actually, it over delivered to what I was expecting. Yeah. So maybe that's partly it.
I think this is the type of thing here, and I'm not sure that this counts for everybody in this group or anything like that at all, but this is stuff where this is one of the films that I can actually get the kids to sit down and watch and kind of be quasi-interested in. They loved the TV show as well and stuff there. So it is.
They watched
one of
that first,
kind of,
did they?
Yeah, we deliberately did that. So we watched that and then we watched the thing. So we were all watching the TV show first of all and then came back to this. And actually, the missus... and the kids aren't here tonight, and they were a bit gutted when they found out that we were watching this tonight. They're keen to do that again.
It's a bit like, the thing is, I'd be worried about this one, is like old Disney films don't capture my kids' attention compared to new ones, because they've got their big eyes and the 3D and the panning in, whereas Mowgli marching up and down with elephants is all like a flat pan. Yeah. So, but I reckon I might try this with the henchlings just to see what their whether they're grooving on it. Oh no, man! I didn't even have a go. So we're stuck with the Umber Bog, man.
Bam! That's what I'm talking about. The Umber Bog has landed.
I really genuinely forgot to think of one. Probably just a bit last minute.
Been quite so many earthquakes around recently and stuff there. Maybe
solar eclipses and shit. Yeah. The Umber Bog. Right, fair enough. But good show. Nothing too weird in it. There's no blacking of animals or anything because it's all puppets. Of quicksand.
Do we? Bit of quicksand. Yeah.
No decapitations. Novelty weapon. The hook thing.
Hook thing on the Skeksis. She kind of uses a sling to get rid of that eye thing, but not it's really true. That
some
much.
Some fancy chopping weapons when they're chopping
the stone.
Fighting by stone.
Yeah. And some quite cool beasties.
Definitely some cool beasties. Yeah.
Do we count?
Hmm?
Just out of interest, do we count Land Striders as Clydesdales?
Oh yeah. No, we don't. Of course we don't. I wasn't expecting that, man. Yeah. They did have slightly furry feet, to be fair. They're the equivalent.
They were quick.
They were quick. They're more like giraffes, weren't they? They were quite cool.
But I think the whole thing here, as a kid watching it as a kid, as I said to you a number of times during the film, was just the whole... It was almost like the seamless thing of real action, as in actors being kids or anything like that, or the thing there... merged in with then going into the puppetry stuff. And I think they did that really well with the stuff where they kind of hit the stuff.
And when I was watching this, I was also imagining my 10 or 12 year old self watching this, not like judging it like just completely as an adult.
Yeah.
And as back in whatever, 82 or whatever it was, I think it's a really good, solid thing. And even now, we just watched it and I thought it was good.
Yeah.
You know, some of the faces are a bit still because it's not...
Yeah. And that's the trouble. Some of them are really good. So like some of them really good little twitches going on and stuff like that. You kind of think, is that deliberate or who cares?
Yeah.
And then some of them just like really quite bland and nothing to them.
What are they called? The Gelflings. Their faces could be a little bit porcelain.
Yeah, absolutely. But whether that was deliberate to kind of show that they were really young compared to everybody else being super old.
Yeah, it's true. They were the youth,
supposed to be
they?
a thousand years old and stuff, aren't they? So.
But maybe just the limitations of the art.
yeah, for real.
But actually, when they did move their mouths, I wasn't thinking they were just like this all day.
Yeah, not like a ventriloquist puppet.
Yeah, they were good. And I think this was, you know, pretty high point in puppetry, right? There was no, I'm not sure there was any, was there any blue screening? Maybe the bats? Not sure.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit there, not much.
But most of it was like thing. And that was interesting about the remake. They committed to puppets again, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which was quite cool. I don't have Netflix anymore. I've managed to cancel recently, but it's quite long. How many? 8, 10?
Something like that. I can't
it's a bit
remember,
of a commitment, isn't it?
But it is, but it's something that we just sat down with. And kind of said, right, this night's going to be this.
Yeah, okay.
And that was kind of everything that we kind of built it up with the kids and stuff. Yeah. So,
because I could, for example, if I got Netflix back, which I won't do straight away, but I could set them on watching the series.
Yeah,
they would chomp through it, maybe next holiday.
Yeah.
They need a break.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that's it. So, thanks, Free For All. That was a good call.
Yeah.
I was dreading it, actually. I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to like it, man. I'm not going to like it. But I did like it, so I'm happy.
That's really weird, because as soon as it mentioned it, I was super excited for this sort of thing there. But again, I think that's just the whole thing, isn't it? That's just with just the film. That's the whole thing of all of this series stuff there. It's the films that kind of mean different things to different people. And it's really weird how people have those.
Yeah, I think about it. I think maybe I watched this when I was about... Probably last time I watched this, maybe I was watching when I was about 16, maybe a bit too cool for it anymore. Like
you were a very cool 16-year-old, to be fair.
Yeah, you're not wrong, man. You're not wrong. But you know what I mean. I think maybe I was like a little bit like, oh, these puppets, man.
Yeah, it's kid stuff.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was never really like that, but maybe just caught me at a bad time. But I liked it. Okay, we're going to call it?
Yep.
Right, that is the... So what's the average? We like to call it average, don't we?
We do like to call it average. So what was that, 4.8 and you were 4.6?
6.5? 7?
4.7?
Let's call it 4.6 with your 4.8, so we're at 4.7.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a solid effort.
Yeah.
So, we haven't done Lady Hawk for a while. This or Lady Hawk, man?
This.
Really?
Yeah, straight away.
Wow, without hesitation.
Yeah.
Right, in the can, that's it. Dark Crystal. Bam!
Well, that's quite enough from me. Thank you very much for listening. I really appreciate all the messages I receive. If you'd like to contact me, any questions, feedback or requests, I'd love to hear from you. You can send me an audio message via speakpipe.com/keepofftheborderlands or one word, or you can email me at spencer.freethrall@gmail.com. You can also find me on Discord and a variety of other places as detailed in the show notes. If you enjoy the show, a review or a share would be much appreciated. The music for Keep Off the Borderlands is provided by the multi-talented Mr. TJ Drennan. And it just remains for me to say, take it away, TJ.
Warning, if celebrating the sound of dice hitting the table and pondering the meaning of the many acronyms within your player's handbook doesn't cure that burning sensation, please see your doctor.